I'm Mark Smith, joining me by phone, U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack. Mr. Secretary, good to have you with us.
Mark, it's great to be with you today.
Well, Congress is starting its August recess. Still no agreement on the new farm bill. This year, the House took the unprecedented move of splitting up the farm bill, passing only the commodity section without the food and nutrition section that make up the bulk of the bill. So pass what you can, debate the rest later. Is this the way we get things done now in the current political climate?
Well, Mark, I wish that were the case, but I'm afraid that's not necessarily the case. First of all, it was a very serious mistake separating the food programs from the farm programs. That's been an historic alliance that's provided the support for the farm programs that's necessary to get a comprehensive bill through. When you realize that farmers and ranchers represent less than 1% of the population, and the balance of 99% may not fully appreciate what farmers and ranchers do, sometimes it's difficult to get urban and suburban legislators to vote for policies like crop insurance and the safety net that are vitally important to our farmers and producers. That's why you've had this alliance for such a long period of time. Separating the two now puts that opportunity at serious risk. Secondly, the depth of cuts that the House is now considering to the Nutrition Assistance Program not only jeopardizes the ability to potentially get a bill passed, but secondly, it also would reduce significantly farm income. Every dollar that's spent in a grocery store, if you track it through the supply chain, 15 to 16 cents of it ends up in a farmer's pocket at the end of the day. So if you're talking about $20 to $40 billion of reductions on the food assistance program and disqualifying millions of people who would otherwise qualify for the program, you're also talking about somewhere between $3 and $6 billion cut to farm income. And then finally, a failure on the part of the House to get its work done, even to appoint conferees to a conference committee that would allow the Senate and House in this month of recess to actually do some work, to work out the differences, to get a bill prepared for leadership, a push in September to get this done, risk the real likelihood that we won't get it done before September 30th. And at that point in time, two things happen. One, Brazil, which has filed suit against the United States and the WTO involving cotton, will now be in a position to assess anywhere from $450 to $850 million of retaliatory measures against our products because we have not solved the cotton support system that we promised we would do 2 years ago. Two, we would face the beginning process of reinstituting permanent agricultural law that would ultimately result in chaos in the markets for farmers and, as importantly, higher consumer prices for staples like milk. That's obviously an untenable circumstance and situation, and it's important and necessary for members of the House in particular to hear from their constituents in August the need to get something done, to get a conference started, to get the differences worked out, because a failure to pass a farm bill not only has all of those ramifications, but it also doesn't give us any deficit reduction.
You know, still,
it's a tough situation.
Still, there seems to be some support for this idea of dealing with this large piece of legislation in a piecemeal fashion. Is this the future of the debate on these issues?
Well, I'm not sure where that support's coming from. 537 agriculture and rural groups, from the Farm Bureau to the National Farmers Union to most of the commodity groups, have indicated prior to the split, encouraging House leadership to reject the split, not to accept a separate bill. To take a look at this comprehensively as it historically has been looked at. It's hard for me to believe that folks in the House turned a deaf ear, if you will, to the cries and concerns of 537 major agricultural groups and rural groups around the country that represent the interests of everything from conservation to rural development to agriculture. Hard for me to understand how anyone can say they've got support for this notion except in the context of a very extreme minority in the House of Representatives.
Well, these members of Congress are going to be going back to their states and districts this month, and many of them will be talking with and hopefully listening to the constituents about the Farm Bill. What are they likely to hear from the folks at home?
Well, I hope they hear, number one, get your work done. Last year you told us that if the current programs were extended for a period of time, you would get a Farm Bill done. You have not delivered on that. No excuses, no pointing fingers, no explanations. We need to get this done, and the best way to get it done is for the House to have conference members appointed, let them work with the Senate members, and get this Farm Bill worked out. Two, don't split the Farm Bill and the Food Program Bill, because at the end of the day, that's going to hurt farmers. And three, get it done before October 1st, because we don't want retaliatory measures from Brazil and we sure as heck don't want permanent law to be extended. At the same time, we are not interested in another extension, which is what was proposed last year, because that would simply be rewarding the failure of the House to get the job done this year. We've got to get this done, and I think people need to convey with a degree of passion and concern and the need for focusing on doing this in a timely way that our patience has run out in rural America.
Well, I know there's some concern among some southern farmers about the cuts in direct payments that are in the current proposals. How will these cuts impact our producers? What kind of feedback are you getting from farmers?
Well, with crop insurance and continued subsidy and support for crop insurance, together with revenue protection programs that are contained in both House and Senate versions, I think farmers should be convinced and certainly should be assured that if we get a farm bill, that there will be an adequate safety net for them. There's no desire on the part of anyone not to provide that safety net, except, again, for extreme members of the House who want to basically cut crop insurance. You know, that's not going to work either. But I think they need to be reassured that if we get a bill, they're going to be taken care of. The problem is, if we don't get a bill, then all these retaliatory measures are going to go against our products, and that will make it less likely that we'll be competitive in the market. Exports will suffer. Jobs will suffer. Farm income will suffer. And I don't think we want that. We want to continue the momentum we've seen recently of record exports, record farm income, record enrollment in conservation. I don't know why, with that momentum, why we would risk losing that momentum by not getting our work done.
Well, the Farm Bill has traditionally been legislation in which the issues being debated were less partisan and more based on geography, urban versus rural. Is that going to continue to be the case, or has the urban and rural balance been thrown off by this debate in the House?
Well, I think it's been thrown off because I think you now have basically rural and urban and suburban legislators who believe and understand the important linkage between the food programs and the farm programs are now united in the effort to have a comprehensive bill. You know, as one Republican senator said to me, we now have two Republican parties and they can't seem to agree. There needs to be a consensus built here, and there needs to be a recognition that the Senate passed a bill not once but twice, not with a 50-plus-1 majority, but a supermajority of over 60 votes. The ideological divide between Senator Ted Cruz and Senator Elizabeth Warren cannot be any deeper or wider than any other ideological divide in the House of Representatives, but yet the Senate found a way to get to 60-plus votes in favor of a comprehensive, reasonable, forward-thinking, reformed-based farm bill. The House has been unable to do that. It's time for the House to recognize that the Senate actually has an appropriate way to move forward. Let's get this done. Let's continue to increase research opportunities. Let's promote trade. Let's provide the safety net. Let's expand job opportunities in rural America. Let's stop the fussing and fighting, and let's get something done.
And of course, there are members of Congress who are calling for cuts in the SNAP program, claiming that there's waste, fraud, and abuse in the program. And a lot of the public has that perception, too. How true is that?
Well, Mark, it's important for people to recognize that the fraud rate in SNAP is roughly 1%. That's one of the lowest fraud rates of any federal program, and it is the lowest fraud rate in the SNAP program in the history of the program. The error rate, where people are paid too much or too little because someone didn't calculate things properly, is about 3.5%. That, too, is an historic low. If you combine the fraud rate and the error rate in SNAP, it's, again, roughly 3 to 4.5%. If you look at the fraud and error rate in crop insurance, you're going to find that that's a much higher rate. I don't hear the same people complaining about crop insurance fraud rates as I do when they complain about SNAP. And that leads me to believe that there's something else afoot here. We are focused at USDA on greater integrity in these programs. I can guarantee you we've taken numerous steps and will continue to take steps to make these programs as efficiently and as effectively and as fairly run. But you cannot use that as a smokescreen for a failure to act on a comprehensive bill that addresses all of the needs of rural America. And right now what we have is a lot of empty rhetoric and no action. And my mom and dad used to tell me that actions speak louder than words. And right now we have very little action coming out of the House, which is unfortunate. And unfortunately, it's not just on this bill. It's on things as basic as a transportation bill that they weren't able to get the votes for. I mean, this is a dysfunctional place here. They need to understand that the American public expects them to get to work, to do things that are necessary to continue the progress that hopefully we're beginning to see as this economy is recovering as we're seeing record incomes in farms and record exports and record enrollment in conservation, record expansion of new opportunities with local and regional food systems, all that stuff can be continued with the passage of a farm bill.
Now, we hear the debate about the food stamp program, but what about the school nutrition programs and other programs like WIC? Where do they stand in this debate, and what are the needs that you see for these programs?
Well, they're not as directly affected or impacted. They're actually more part of the overall budget discussion, which obviously we also have some serious difficulties on. You know, we continue to look at ways in which we can improve that program, and I'll be the first to admit that we have work to do on the school lunch program in terms of the error rate, but it's not the federal government that's basically creating the errors. It's folks at the local level. We need to do a better job of educating, a better job of training the cashiers and the folks who work in schools on this school lunch program so that we can reduce that rate. I'm not sure that if we reduce the rate, we necessarily save money, but we at least have a program that's effectively run, and we're going to be focusing on that. That's really not part of this conversation. The conversation here now is the House's desire to do two things in the SNAP program. First, they want to cut the amount of money in the program, and the only way you can do that from their vantage point is to eliminate what is called categorical eligibility. It's a process by which states, 43 states, administer the SNAP program. It's efficiency. If you go into a state office and you apply for Medicaid or you apply for temporary assistance for needy families, well, the theory is if you're applying for those programs and you apply for those programs, the conditions for success in those programs or enrollment in those programs is the same as the SNAP program. So why make a person go through the process twice? So you're automatically certified for SNAP. They want to basically discontinue that. What that will mean is that people will have to apply multiple times, and the result of that will be that several million people who would otherwise be qualified for the program will be discouraged from participating. The second thing they want to do is to apply a work requirement. Well, when you realize who is actually in the SNAP program, you'll realize how silly that notion is. 92% of the people in SNAP are senior citizens, people with disabilities, children, or people actually in the workforce. A significant number of people in SNAP are already working. They're working a part-time job or full-time job, just simply do not make enough money through no fault of theirs because of an economy, because of where they may be, and they need a little help. Well, that's 92%. The other 8% are folks who are on temporary assistance for needy families, and they already have a work and education requirement. So what is the purpose of this? Well, I think the purpose of it is to say to senior citizens, you got to go back to work. Or the purpose of it is to say to people with disabilities, yeah, too bad, even though it may be hard for you, you're going to have to go to work. Or the purpose of it is to say to kids, get in the workforce. That can't possibly be the right policy. So I think it's a lack of understanding about precisely what SNAP is and who gets SNAP that's compelling people to propose these things that really, at the end of the day, are not workable.
So I know your time is short. We've got these widely different proposals from the Senate and from the House. What happens next after the August recess?
Well, depending upon what happens during August, we either have a bill because the House has seen the light and they appoint conferees and the folks get in a room and they become reasonable and they work out their differences and they get a bill passed and they get it to the president before September 30th, or we come back in September and we're in the same position we're in. October 1st comes. Brazil, the risk of Brazilian retaliation occurs and is real, and if time lingers, permanent law goes into effect, and that will impact and affect producers and consumers in a negative way. We won't get the benefit of deficit reduction for all those deficit hawks out there. We will pass on that opportunity. We won't get trade promotion, so we'll lose export markets. We won't have a safety net because many of those programs will expire or won't be restored for livestock and dairy producers. We won't have additional research opportunities for our land-grant universities. It will be chaotic. All of that chaos can be avoided by people doing their job and getting this bill done.
All right. U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack. Mr. Secretary, good to have you with us. Thank you for your time today.
You bet, Mark. Thank you.